Okay, so I wanted to do a video that's a little bit different. I've never really done a video like this before, so please excuse my amateurish layout and editing skills. Mary's perpetual virginity was one topic that recently came up for discussion amongst me and some of my Protestant friends, and I was honestly really surprised at how different their views are compared to those of Catholics, and as far as I can tell, the Orthodox Church also, since it wasn't something I'd ever questioned before. So I've gone away, done my research, and here is the result. Also, just to quickly mention, all the Bible quotations I will be using are from the RSV CE translation. But now, time to get on to the video. Some verses often cited as evidence against Mary's perpetual virginity are ones that make mention of brothers of Jesus. For example, Matthew chapter 13, verse 55. Is not this the carpenter's son? Is not his mother called Mary? And are not his brethren James and Joseph and Simon and Judas? John chapter 7, verse 10. But after his brethren had gone up to the feast, then he also went up, not publicly, but in private. And Acts chapter 1, verse 14. All these with one accord devoted themselves to prayer, together with the women and Mary the mother of Jesus and with his brethren. Although in all these quotations the word used is brethren, another word commonly used, particularly among translations such as ESV and NIV, is brother. So, what is this word that seems to have caused so much confusion? Well, all the books I just mentioned were originally written in Greek, and the word used in all of them is the word adelphos, which, according to BibleStudyTools.com, can mean a brother or half brother, having the same national ancestor, a fellow countryman, a fellow believer, an associate in employment, brethren in Christ, or indeed all men. While it's true that in regularly spoken Greek it would be unusual for the word to be used in any context other than blood relations, in the context of the Bible it's actually commonly used to mean a multitude of different things. For example, in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 21, it says, "Now that you also may know how I am and what I am doing, Tychicus, the beloved brother and faithful minister in the Lord, will tell you everything." Matthew chapter 25, verse 40. And the king will answer them, "Truly I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these my brethren, you did it to me." And Romans chapter 8, verse 19. For those whom he foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his son, in order that he might be the firstborn among his brethren. With adelphos being the word used in all these examples. I think that the relationship Jesus had with those around him was so intimate that they were like brothers to him, but this doesn't mean that they were actually biologically related. There is also an argument that there are several other instances in the Bible where, if Jesus had siblings, it would have made much more sense for them to be mentioned, such as in Luke chapter 2, verses 41 to 52, when Jesus was lost in the temple. Or in John chapter 19, verses 25 to 27, where he entrusted Mary to John from the cross, which I'll come back to in just a moment. The notion that Jesus had siblings is a fair argument, and it is noteworthy that in several instances there is a juxtaposition of brothers next to Mary his mother. But I don't think it's safe to assume that the Gospel writers and St. Paul had quite the same meaning in mind that we do in the modern day English language. Back to John chapter 19, verse 25 to 27, where Jesus entrusted Mary to the beloved apostle John from the cross. Here we have to take into account the culture and the time that we're in. If a woman was widowed, she would have been entrusted to the care of the firstborn son. We could assume that Joseph died at some point between Jesus being 12 years of age and beginning his public ministry, since there is no mention of him anywhere after the episode of Jesus getting lost in Jerusalem. This is further evidenced by the fact that Mary seems to be under Jesus' care. She was his to give away to the care of another. However, if there had been any more children, Jesus would not have entrusted Mary to the care of John. If there was a second-born son, Mary would, of course, be committed to his care. And even if there weren't any brothers and only sisters, Mary would have been committed to the care of the sister's husband before someone with no relation to the family. And it would be highly unusual for any young woman to be unmarried in those days, especially if her father was dead. So the very act of giving Mary to the care of another would have been a huge dishonour to any siblings of Jesus. And remember, John at the time of Jesus' death is presumed to have been only around 15 or 16 and probably didn't have a stable home or job. What could possibly have given him a stronger claim to the care of Mary if there was a much older, biologically related man who was able to provide a stable life for Mary? Wouldn't Jesus have wanted that for his mother? I've done the siblings' argument to death at this point, but there's still one flaw in my line of thinking. Just because Jesus didn't have any siblings doesn't necessarily mean that Mary and Joseph never had sex. Another commonly cited verse against Mary's perpetual virginity is Matthew chapter 1, verse 25. But he knew her not until she had borne a son, and he called his name Jesus. You'll be happy to know I've got more Greek lessons for you with this one. The key word in this sentence is until. In Greek, there are actually two phrases used for until, which have been translated indiscriminately in, as far as I'm aware, every single version of the Bible. One is heos, and this word is the meaning of until as we understand it today. Things are a certain way, until a signified time, and then things are another way. A very simple example of this is in 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verse 8, where Paul writes, "But I will stay in Ephesus until Pentecost." Things will be a certain way, Paul is in Ephesus, until a signified time, Pentecost, where things will be another way, Paul is no longer in Ephesus. Simple enough, right? Now, here's where it gets complicated. The second phrase used commonly in the Bible is heos hu, which I apologise because I've probably butchered the pronunciation of that. But this phrase has a totally different meaning to our own interpretation of the word until. Rather than signifying a point in time after which things change, the phrase is simply used to emphasise what came before the particular point in time, but it doesn't give any details as to what happened after. It's almost like a strange mix of the words before and until as we know them, and we don't really have a direct translation in the English language. I know that's confusing, and the best way I can explain is with another example. In 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 19, it says, "And we have the prophetic word made more sure. You will do well to pay attention to this as to a lamp shining in a dark place, until the day dawns and the morning star rises in your hearts." Nobody would read this and then suggest that after the day dawns and the morning star rises in our hearts, that we should stop paying attention to the prophetic words. It doesn't say anything about what we do after the signified time. It only emphasizes what we should do before. Backtrack to Matthew chapter 1 verse 25 and we will find that it is the second phrase, heos hu, that is used in the original Greek writing. I think it's fair to say that this line was simply put in to emphasise to the readers that Joseph had nothing to do with the conception of Jesus, presumably to avoid people suggesting that Jesus' conception was not virginal. However, by breaking down the sentence in its original context, there is nothing here to suggest that Mary and Joseph engaged in sexual relations after Jesus was born. We can apply the same principle to Luke chapter 2, verse 7. "And she gave birth to her firstborn son, and wrapped him in swaddling cloths, and laid him in a manger, because there was no place for them in the inn." The use of the word firstborn here is simply to stress Jesus' place in the Holy Family, since the firstborn son had the rights to the inheritance and other privileges. It does not necessarily imply subsequent children. Okay, so up until now, everything I've said has left the matter ambiguous at best, but I believe I can take this even further. I don't want to leave it a grey area open to interpretation. So I have one final theory to pose, and I believe everything we need to prove Mary's perpetual virginity can be found by linking Luke chapter 1 and Numbers chapter 30, with maybe a little bit of help from Matthew. The key moment is where the angel Gabriel appears to Mary and tells her that she will conceive and bear Jesus. Luke chapter 1 verse 27 tells us that Mary was already betrothed to Joseph at the time when the angel Gabriel appeared to her, and Matthew chapter 1 verse 19 implies that they were maybe even already married, saying, "And her husband Joseph, being a just man and unwilling to put her to shame, resolved to send her away quietly." This verse explicitly states that Joseph was her husband at that time, and the phrase "send her away" is also commonly translated as divorce. So perhaps Mary and Joseph were already married, yet we know that Mary was still a virgin. wouldn't they have consummated their marriage on their wedding night? But even if they were only engaged, they would still have been going to get married soon and would have been planning on consummating then. Yet in Luke chapter 1, verse 34, Mary still asks the question, how can this be since I have no husband? We've just established that Mary either does have or is about to have a husband, but other translations have this question as, since I am a virgin, or since I know no man. Doesn't it seem a bit strange that Mary was a virgin and seemed to be under the impression that she was going to remain that way, even though we know that she was already married, or at the very least, engaged? It would have been reasonable for her to assume that Jesus would have been conceived through herself and Joseph either on their upcoming wedding night or at some point in the near future as a husband and wife. But what possible reason could Mary and Joseph have had not to have sex? This is where Numbers chapter 30 comes in. It's not explicitly mentioned, but it's clear from reading the chapter in its entirety that young Jewish men could, through their own choice, consecrate themselves to the Lord through a vow of celibacy, and likewise a young Jewish woman could do the same, provided that her father and or her husband approved it. I think it's very reasonable to say that Mary and Joseph took this vow of chastity, and when the angel Gabriel appeared to Mary, she was confused because she knew and trusted that God would never ask her to break her vow of virginity, and thus asked the clarifying question. I will admit that this last part is entirely just speculation, but it does make a lot of sense when the conversation is put in context and when we consider possible explanations for why Mary would have been confused about how she, as a married woman, could become pregnant. But all this aside, the perpetual virginity of Mary has been the most widely held belief among Christians for most of history, right from the beginning, as evidenced in the Proto-Evangelium of James, which was written around 120 AD when Mary herself would still have been within living memory. And it depicts her taking a vow of perpetual virginity, although admittedly this isn't an approved writing. And the perpetual virginity of Mary was officially declared dogma at the Fifth Ecumenical Council in Constantinople in 533 AD, and it was over 1,000 years before it would be widely questioned again after the Protestant Reformation in the 16th century. So anyway, I hope I at least semi didn't mess up this video, and I hope you've enjoyed it. Whether you agree or disagree with me, I'd love to hear your own thoughts as well in the comments. And please let me know if you'd be interested in more videos like this one on different theological topics in the future. Thanks for watching.